are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I checked this through with Darius, and he's okay with me asking him some off-the-wall questions intermittently throughout the show.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Duck pin bowling? No, just regular bowling, I think. What's duck pin bowling?
If it's not 151, we're going to bump it up to 151 because that's really, really potent alcohol.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
So fortunately, I'm not one of the people who's been cursing.
We can throw some stuff up off the wall and see if it sticks. So I applaud your efforts on that, Darius.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Hello, everyone out there. This is quite the unusual podcast today. In case you haven't noticed, I am not Justin Mason. I am a couple time zones over from Justin Mason in the Midwest instead of on the West Coast. Fortunately, we have our friend Darius with us. We are going to do episode, what I think is 151. I'm not exactly sure, but I think it's 151. Plus, if it's not 151, we're going to bump it up to 151 because that's really, really potent alcohol. Do you have Bacardi 151 by you, Darius?
I don't think I have seen that, no.
It's a form of Bacardi that you can actually light on fire, so it's fairly dangerous.
Yeah, that sounds quite dangerous. Something you're supposed to drink, yeah.
Anyway, for what it's worth, I suppose Darius and I should be applauded because despite the fact that we lost sort of our pilot and normal bombardier in Justin and in our friend Eli, we decided that we should try and put out a little content for you because there's enough going on in the baseball world that we can throw some stuff up off the wall and see if it sticks. So I applaud your efforts on that, Darius. Why don't you quick make sure and tell everyone where they can reach you on Twitter. If anyone's not following you, they should be by now. Go ahead, my friend.
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. And in addition to Friends with Fantasy Benefits, I'm over at Banished to the Pen as well.
Yeah, Darius has definitely added a wonderful texture and a wonderful level of analysis to the show over the last month and a half. And we definitely appreciate it. And I did not want to miss an opportunity to chat with them today and to put out some content for you guys. So we are firing away at doing just that. One thing you're going to get out of me is maybe a little less structure than you normally get out of Justin, which hopefully will be fun for everyone. I checked this through with Darius, and he's okay with me asking him some off-the-wall questions intermittently throughout the show. So since regular bowling on lanes with regular-sized pins is a huge thing in the Midwest, I'm going to ask Darius some questions from the Midwest and see how silly they are and if they're even remotely important or have any context where he is. So I'm going to ask you this, Darius. Have you ever been duck pin bowling?
Duck pin bowling? No, just regular bowling, I think. What's duck pin bowling?
See, this is probably one of those things where I'm out of the culture loop here. duck pin bowling is a smaller sort of there's smaller pins or what have you, and I thought it was more popular in Europe. But you've been regular bowling. Are you a good bowler?
I wouldn't say good. I'm the kind of bowler, if I was to just go casually with my friends, I would probably win or at least come close to it. But were I to be bowling with actual bowlers, I would lose.
Yeah, we're pretty bowling nuts here. I'm to the point where, you know, my bowling average is always between 200 and 210, and I'm not really considered a good bowler. So there's a bit of a culture difference, or it's just a thing in the Midwest here. When it gets cold, we don't have much to do. We bowl.
I think, there are some serious bowlers. I know a couple of baseball guys here who are quite into it in leagues, but I certainly wouldn't be in the 200 range when I went. So
all right, well, back more to a line that Justin would normally have. I did send a list of players at least to our friend Darius to to cover, so he knew what I was going to throw at him. But I'm probably going to do it a little bit more in a question sense and make some statements because of why these people are on my mind. First of all is our good friend Bryce Harper, who, you know, doesn't like any clown questions from the media, amongst other things. It's certainly his career has been anything but boring to this point. But I'm making this wide open statement that I'm sure Darius is going to try and talk me off the cliff from, that I am done drafting Bryce Harper for the next 5 years. And here's why. First of all, it just seems like his career is a roller coaster, and 2015 is the outlier. He had an 1109 OPS in 2015. His closest OPS closest OPS other than that in his 5 years in the bigs is 854. I really don't trust his stolen bases going forward. I mean, when he had 8 in the last 2 years combined when he was younger, it's hard for me to think that, you know, I can count on him for stolen bases going forward. You know, it's also, I'd like to mention, he's really had a roller coaster year with his batting average, which some people are in OBP league, so maybe that matters less to them because he certainly has walked a ton this year. But here's his batting averages by the month. 286, 200, 280, 176, followed by 292 in this partial month. Also, 9 of his 20 home runs are in April. You know, he had a 714 slugging percentage in April, and his highest full month slugging since then is 419. So I'm really not playing the game that Bryce Harper's not a good player. I'm playing the game that his perception is going to be a lot higher than I'm willing to take him. Like, I don't want to take him with a top 5 or 6 pick in the next 5 years, and I think he's going to go that high. Do you agree or disagree with me there, Darius?
I think certainly next year I agree with you, because it doesn't really seem like there's much of a discount at all being baked in, despite the fact that, you know, he's not near the top of any leaderboards apart from walks, really. He certainly isn't giving people what they wanted when they drafted him. Probably quite a lot of people number one overall this year. It does seem to be like, you know, maybe he's dropping to 5, and that's not really a huge discount.
No, it certainly isn't. You know, we had a long debate before we added Darius to the show. One of our first shows of the year, we debated at length, ad nauseum, if you will, between Trout and Harper with the first pick. And I was of the stance that I wasn't going to blame anyone if they took Harper first, but I was still going to take Trout because I believed a little bit more in the track record and the consistency and what have you. So I'm hanging on that thread of, you know, not being too mad at myself, because at least I would not have taken him first, and I don't own him. Do you have a stock in Mr. Harper this year in any of your leagues, Darius?
I actually don't know. They're all keeper leagues, or I don't think I actually drafted in the top 2 or 3 this year, so I didn't have the opportunity to take him anyway. So fortunately, I'm not one of the people who's been cursing this year.
Yeah, you know, and especially after you had the first, after you got the first month of his production, you thought, I made the perfect pick.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Then it's just not actually worked out to that fruition. So there's a lot to be said. I wanted to start the show with two separate outfielders, both of which have been disappointing and both of which I want to sort of put into context going forward. And the second one is down a level in that sort of middling outfielder tier, but he has been absolutely dreadful this year. And that is one Justin Upton. You know, Justin Upton is still only 28 years old. He always throws in some stolen bases. He's got 8 this year. But this year might be his most frustrating year ever, because he really has had only one short, decent stretch the whole year. He's only hitting .226, and he's only got 13 home runs and a dismal 46 RBIs on that team. You know, and on top of that, if you want some icing on top of this, you know, this compost heap Sunday, how about the fact that he's 1 for his last 30? So are you as frustrated and distraught with Justin Upton as I am, Darius?
Yeah, I think I am. It was kind of, I looked at his line earlier in the year and I thought, well, it's been pretty bad so far, but everything kind of looks pretty normal. And so I think we talked about it, maybe it was the first or second episode I was on, and I said, you know, I think it's going to come around. It will still be useful down the stretch. And like you say, he's 1 for his last 30, so he's still killing you, which is not what I expected. The only real thing that I can see that's different now is that he does seem to be getting pitched inside a little bit more. And I don't know how much that's contributing to the strikeout rate, but obviously the approach at the plate has got worse. His walks have dropped several percent. His strikeouts have gone up several percent. Terrible combo. I'm not really sure where he's going from here, because I've been sitting here all season thinking that it's going to get better, and actually it's kind of getting worse now.
Yeah, and if there's anything frustrating for fantasy owners, for me, since I don't usually buy into Upton, it's that he really sort of clogs up that lineup in a way. You know, to give him his proper respect for who he's been at times in his career, he's got to bat, you know, towards the upper middle of the lineup, you know, where when guys like Castellanos and guys like JD Martinez, you know, even Victor Martinez hasn't been so good this year. It just seems like there's a logjam within that lineup that a bunch of guys who should be hitting in the middle of a lineup somewhere are going to have to hit towards the bottom of the lineup, because we're waiting for Justin Upton to either focus or to make an adjustment. It seems like he's too young, and he seems, you know, he's played, you know, he hasn't been hurt all that much. So you would think that this cliff has to end at some point, which kind of gets to my next, the next little line of thought that I had going here. Darius, I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to put Justin Upton up against some mid-level outfielders for next year, and I want you to tell me, all guys that would be looking to bounce back, and I want you to tell me if you would be targeting either of them as thinking they're, you know, major bounce-back candidates, or if you would prefer to leave them both alone. So let's start with Justin Upton and his former teammate Jason Hayward. Who would you be targeting either one of them, and who do you like better to bounce back next year?
I think it's got to be Upton. Hayward is just a mess. It seems like he can't really do anything at the plate anymore. He's not even an average hitter. He's been one of the worst regular hitters in all of baseball. Upton, I at least have the hope that you're sort of going to get maybe 20 homers and 15 steals, and Hayward's going to struggle to make double digits, certainly in home runs. And overall, he's just as bad as Upton has hit. Hayward has been worse, I think. So
it's remarkably enough,
depressing. Yeah, and I know some of the guys in the Fantasy Benefits chat earlier were discussing who was the worst free agent signing earlier, and it's basically between Upton and Hayward. So yes. I think Upton might come at enough of a discount, unlike Harper. I think people might be scared off enough by this year that, you know, he'll be worth taking a flyer on in sort of a fairly late round. But I don't see it with Hayward. I think he's just gone.
You know, the thing about Hayward for me is I try not to ramble on too much about it, because it's a hot button topic for me. The thing about Hayward to me is that I fully believe that his swing has always been really long and wonky. You know, it's been really easy to get out of timing. And I think Jason Hayward, you know, as a reserve round flyer or something next year, just to see if he gets off to a better start. You know, I'm not going to blame anybody for doing that. But the Sabre people who are in love with his bat and in love with his glove and in love with his age, you know, I wonder how they feel about the rest of that contract, since it's only just begun in Chicago. And they're, you know, Chicago is obviously excelling without him even performing. Can you imagine how good they would be if Jason Hayward was having a good year? Is another way to approach this, because
yeah, they would be terrifying. I mean, they're already terrifying, but imagine if they were 5 or 6 wins better now. Yeah,
exactly. Okay, how about another guy who you know, I don't know, maybe this guy, since he's older, is maybe a different kind of player completely, but I wonder what your thoughts are on if you'd rather target Jacoby Ellsbury or Justin Upton next year.
I mean, Ellsbury's been pretty bad as well. This is a rough season for some former high-profile guys. I think I might still go for Ellsbury. It's close for me there. I don't know. I can't see a huge amount of upside there, but I think you at least do get some sort of stolen base. I think he's still in the 20 range this year, Ellsbury.
He is, yeah.
And yeah, I think his average will still be okay, which I'm not sure I can say that for Upton anymore. So yeah. I might take the shot on Ellsbury, but that's a close one for me. I don't feel good about it.
Okay, well, instead of moving down, let's move up a little bit to someone who at least we know has some value. Would you prefer Justin Upton or Matt Kemp next year?
Oh, I hate those guys who don't walk, and Kemp's kind of given up walking altogether now, but so has Upton. I think Kemp will probably outstrip him in the power department, and given that Atlanta lineup, he'll probably get to play a lot. So I think I'll take Kemp.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who would be willing to do that, but I mean, this is also a very interesting profile of middling outfielders, because I think that's going to be a very, very challenging part of drafts next year, trying to navigate your 2, 3, and 4 outfielders and seeing, trying to extract some value from a wasteland, a lot of players that whose value seems to be lessening at an almost alarming rate. All right, on to my second bizarre question that I'm trying to come up with, off-the-wall question, if you will. So I'm wondering, how many times have you seen the band Oasis, or is that just our perception that Oasis would be a ginormous superstars by you?
Well, I mean, I'm going to share my age probably in a good way here. When sort of the heyday of Britpop, Oasis and Blur was really huge, I was kind of 10, 11, 12. so I was not going out to rock concerts at that age, sadly. So I have seen them once.
Okay.
But quite a big gig here.
Would you recommend others to go and see them? Were they that good?
Yeah, they were really good. And especially their first couple of albums, they were kind of, it was a whole thing. It wasn't just the music at the time. It was sort of back before Tony Blair betrayed everybody. It was sort of all part of that whole new wave and a lot of wave of hope, and you know, everybody was very excited about it, and it was sort of, it all kind of meshed together as I remember it. It was sort of quite a hopeful time in this country, and Oasis were kind of part of that, really, the soundtrack to that. So yeah, they were a terrific band. Really had a lot of I mean, Liam Gallagher is probably not the I won't say anything too indelicate on here, but he's not the nicest chap, perhaps, but he was certainly a front man with a lot of stage presence. And yeah, they were very, you know, sort of unique sound for the time. They did riff on the Beatles a lot as well, but there was something that Manchester twang for their playing that was sort of unique to them as well. So yeah, definitely I would recommend, especially if people aren't really familiar with Oasis, to check out their first couple of albums, because they are really, really good.
Yeah. Definitely, they definitely rang, they rang very loudly in the alternative music culture in this country as well. And of course, it seemed like we had a little less access to them than you guys did over there. So we're kind of envious of that. We're going to move on from these middling outfielders to another area. One of the ways that I differ from my brethren here at Friends with Fantasy Benefits is that I draft a 50-round slow draft or two every very, very early in the year, between, you know, sometime either December or January or February. And those are called NFBC leagues, and they're draft and holds. And so those drafts go really, really deep. So sometimes I bring up some people for the show, and I can sort of tell that I get a nose turned at me, because they're people that, you know, that in regular 14-team leagues with 23, 25, you know, even 30-man rosters, you wouldn't be thinking of. One of the guys who's kind of intrigued me, who seems to be coming on in a way, and I sort of want to put his career in a little bit of contrast or context, is David Fries, who's obviously a former World Series hero when he was with the St. Louis Cardinals. He's 9-for-25 in his last 7 games. He's 33 years old now. He's signed on a 1-year deal with the Pirates, where he's accrued both first base and third base eligibility. He's only got 11 home runs. He absolutely destroys left-handed pitching to the tune of .342 this year. He's hitting .265 with 7 home runs versus right-handers, which I also find playable. And I guess, you know, in these draft and hold leagues where you're trying to cover bench spots with people with multi-position eligibility, and also the fact that I just feel like David Fries, when he was a World Series hero, got really pull happy. And for whatever reason, I think there was a couple year lag there. And now he seems to be using right field more. You know, he's hitting in the .280s again. You know, he's only going to end up with sort of middling power. But if you need to cover some bases late in a draft, and I also want to wonder where he's going to end up. I mean, it seems like a natural fit for maybe somebody like the Mets next year that doesn't want to spend a lot of money but needs to cover, you know, some offense. You know, when Kelly Johnson is a huge offensive upgrade, so is David Freese. So I'm ready to get blasted on this, Darius. How much do you think I'm overblowing maybe a complete non-fantasy factor in David Freese?
I think you have to be in a pretty deep league like the one you're mentioning, but he's obviously still a good hitter. There was a period of time that I recall back when I first started playing fantasy that he was sort of one of those guys that people were quite excited about if he could just stay on the field for long enough. He sort of, you know, went through quite a few, one of those guys who sort of seemed to have those nagging injuries quite a lot and would frustrate you. But when he was hitting, he was really good. And he sort of seems to have got back to his 2012 levels this year. As you say, especially against left-handers, I think he can be a really useful player to have in your team. Sort of consistently been like 850, 900 OPS guy against lefties in his career. So that's a nice thing to have. And if it is a deep league, then that's certainly something that's very valuable to have on your bench. I do think a lot of it will depend on where he ends up and whether you can count on the playing time, because the Pirates have sort of early on in the season, he was very much being split with the returning Jung-ho Gang. And he wasn't really getting any time at first. And it's only over sort of recent weeks that he's kind of been drafted in a lot more instead of John Jaso at first base as well. So I do wonder if somebody signed him and then he was almost exclusively a platoon player against lefties, it might be difficult, even in the deepest of leagues, to justify it. But I think there's something there. I don't think you're crazy.
I appreciate that. Most people should probably think I'm.
Not for this anyway.
Yeah, I'm filled with delirium as a generality. Speaking of filled with delirium, I put another name on the list, and sometimes I put people on the list because I really want to find out if there's more there than people are acting like there is. And there's a kid named Ryan Healy who's only 24 years old. I first became aware of him because, you know, he ripped a double down the line on a 100-mile-an-hour pitch in the Futures game this year. And I always want to try and mine teams that I think are absolutely dreadful because of the extra opportunity that's in front of them that maybe they wouldn't have elsewhere. And Ryan Healy playing for the A's, he's also looks like he's going to be third base and first base eligible in most leagues next year. He's got 6 major league home runs in 30 games, and I've been seeing his name pop up on the bottom line here pretty regularly. He's got 22 strikeouts in those 30 games. I'm imagining that I pretty much went so deep that you were surprised and maybe didn't even know who he was. Did you know who Ryan Healy was, Darius?
I'd seen the name and that was about it, really. I had to go and sort of look into him in quite a bit more detail because I knew that he was a third baseman for the A's. I think I'd seen him on, you know, on the bottom end of a prospect list once, but I didn't really know anything about his profile or anything like that. So I certainly had to do some research.
Well, you know, on the surface, I mean, you know, I'm always stuck in this context problem this year because people are calling up players so much younger than they used to, and Ryan Healy is the kind of guy that would not have been called up 5 years ago until he was 26 or 27 years old. And so because that maturing process from 21 to 24 to me seems like it's very tricky to gauge. And so, you know, I look and I see that his OBP has been pretty good the last couple of years, you know, over 400, a couple of his stops in the minors. But he doesn't appear to have any running ability per se at all. He doesn't seem to be a below average runner, but he certainly doesn't seem like he's ever going to be a base dealer. So, you know, he's one of these guys that maybe you want to chart and maybe at least you heard the name here first, as far as our listeners are concerned. You know, I don't know that he's somebody that's going to get drafted in less than sort of an 18 team league or like a 12 to 14 team AL only league next year. But if I accomplished anything, you and I have seen his very lackluster minor league numbers, and that's about what we accomplished by having him on the list. You agree?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of interested by it. This seems like maybe the kind of guy you get these players sometimes. They don't have the exciting minor league numbers that jump out, and they don't have the prospect pedigree, and so they sort of get left off of everything, and people dismiss them. And so far, you know, he's holding his own in the majors, and kind of the reports I read and a bit of what I've seen suggests that, you know, there are a few people out there who think actually this could be a, you know, a full-time major league third baseman who could sort of hit 275 with 20 plus homers if everything pans out. And who knows whether it will, but so far so good, I think.
And I mean, he's definitely one of those guys. I mean, if you want opportunity, the A's are a team to be on right now. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, they're a quote-unquote cleanup hitter from earlier in the season. They had no problem moving Danny Valencia out to the outfield, even though I didn't really know that he was much. He had much outfield pedigree to begin with. So, you know, the opportunity is definitely there. They're going to be searching, and there's going to be available at-bats in Oakland. So we will be able to find out. He's got that is included in his floor, meaning that he's definitely going to get opportunity, and he's not going to be someone, they're not going to go out and pick up a free agent to hold back Ryan Healy, whatever Ryan Healy is going to be. So there's something to be said for that as well. So now that we've covered these two very middling corner infield types, I'm going to go on to another oddball question. So we have this perception here that if you want to, you can just sort of catch a small flight or take a drive over to Ireland and get smashed. You ever just go to Ireland just to get drunk, or does that not happen?
I've never gone to Ireland just to get drunk. No, I don't. It's not actually that far from me. So in North Wales, I live not far from a place called Holyhead, which is where the ferries go over to Dublin. So it wouldn't be too difficult for me to hop on a train and then get on the ferry and go over to Dublin and get smashed. One thing I would say about Dublin is it's very, very expensive. So were you trying to go somewhere for a weekend to get smashed, you're probably better off going to somewhere like Manchester or Liverpool, where you can drink for a lot cheaper and there's still plenty to do on a night out.
So our perception that the people in Ireland are complete drunkards, etc., that there's a lot more drinking in Ireland than there is in England, you don't find that to be true?
I'm not sure I'd say that. I don't know what the figures are. People drink quite a lot in England too. I'm not saying that the Irish don't drink. And certainly I've known some Irishmen I met in Liverpool, actually, is one of the most prodigious drinkers I've ever known. So they can certainly hold their own in the drinking club. But I don't know that they're, I would describe them as moderate drinkers either.
Well, you know, this is a fascinating part of the show for me. I was an English major. I was a pre-law English major in college before I bought my business, and I've been running my business for the last 20 years. So the trip to England is definitely on my bucket list, although a lot of my trip to England would definitely consist of sort of London and a lot of the sort of Shakespearean stuff, etc. There's certainly a ton of things that I would like to do throughout the entire country in England. So this is fascinating for me. So thanks for putting up with this sort of American Midwest nostalgia. I appreciate it.
No, not at all. to answer any queries, and you know, if you ever come over, then you're more than welcome.
Well, we will definitely combine for to go to a beer hall somewhere if and when I get my chance to go over there, my friend. All right, let's talk about one of the most curious call-ups I can ever remember, and you had mentioned it in the chat room as well in our podcast chat room, that wondering if anyone had talked about Dansby Swanson yet. Dansby Swanson is the young shortstop just drafted out of Vanderbilt last year, part of the most controversial trade that I can remember in recent memory, when he got traded in the Shelby Miller trade from Arizona to the Atlanta Braves. And I find it really, really odd that he got called up. In 84 games, he has 8 home runs, 6 stolen bases, and a .261 batting average. You know, the lowest OPS, slugging percentage, and on-base percentage of any of his stops in the minor are at Double A at his most recent stop. So I know that Atlanta might be trying to be forward-looking. Maybe they're just trying to put some butts in the seats. But I find this to be a very, very odd call-up. Would you agree?
Yeah, the timing seems strange, and what you mentioned last might be one of the primary reasons, I guess, that they're maybe trying to revive some interest in what otherwise is a pretty dreadful team that is on course to lose 100 games. So perhaps they're just hoping that he's going to revive some interest. the indication seems to be that they definitely think he's ready to play defensively. But there's a lot left in his offensive game that he needs to learn. And whether he's going to do that the best in the majors is unclear. We've certainly seen even more prominent prospects like Byron Buxton, who can't figure things out in the majors. So I don't know whether calling him up right now and then having him struggle for 6 weeks because he's not ready is really the best thing for his development. It's definitely a weird one for me.
Well, I mean, it's also interesting because it comes on the heels of Orlando Arcia being called up in Milwaukee, which regular listeners of the show will know that I pay real close attention to the Brewers living just a couple hours from Milwaukee. And Orlando Arcia defensively reminds me a ton of Alcides Escobar, who is another former Milwaukee prospect, which is high praise. Alcides Escobar is an excellent defensive shortstop. His hitting, Orlando or Arcia's hitting profile is not very similar to Escobar's, though, in so much as he appears to have a much better strike zone management than Escobar did. He also appears to use the whole field a lot more than Escobar did, especially when he was younger, etc. So I don't know if these two call-ups are really tied together, but Arcia had spent a lot of time at AAA, and so that was one of the distinct differences that I saw between the two situations, is it seemed like Arcia was to the point where he had been fairly successful at AAA, not overly successful, but at least he had spent some time there. So this seems more rushed, the Dansby Swanson thing. And, to be honest with you, I doubt we're going to see a whole lot of fantasy production from either Dansby Swanson or Orlando Arcia even next year. I would think they're more like 2 years down the road to see sort of how they're growing at the major league level. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. It seems like if Swanson is going to have a sort of seriously valuable tool that will carry into fantasy production, it will be his speed. And he certainly hasn't shown that yet in the minors. So I think it might take him a little while to get used to major league pitches and learn when to steal on them. Certainly his speed is plus, but he hasn't translated that into steals yet. So I think it could be definitely at least a year or two before we see him being a higher level pick in fantasy drafts.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. Everything going on in Atlanta the last couple of years is very bizarre. Both of them changing stadiums so quickly, and then sort of starting a rebuild the year before, but bringing in Matt Kemp and some other pieces as to if they're going to be like sort of in limbo or halfway between next year. I think the Atlanta situation is a situation to really watch. If people ask me what I thought the Braves were going to do in the offseason, I would literally look at them puzzled as if, hell if I know, because I don't have a clue. You agree with that as well?
Yeah, that's a pretty fair assessment of my thinking. <on people.
laughs> All right, well, we do have somebody more, quite a bit more interesting, a high-level guy that I put on the list, and that is one Yu Darvish of Persian descent. You know, he's got 67 strikeouts in 52 innings. He came back from Tommy John and had a small stint, a little setback where he went, where he got shut down for a little bit and then he came back. He's got a most curious stat line for somebody coming back from Tommy John. I mean, the big concern was, he was never an elite level whip guy. He wasn't a bad whip guy, but he's got a 1.18 career whip. Well, all of a sudden he comes back from Tommy John, and control is usually the thing that everyone says comes back last. Now he's got a 1.04 whip in 52 innings, and he's only got 3 walks in his last 5 games started. He's got an 11.6 strikeout per 9 innings, which is above his career average, which is excellent. So, I'm not only going to ask you your opinion about Yu Darvish, but then afterwards I'm going to try and get some background and where exactly you think he fits in next year. Are you as overly encouraged as I am from what we're seeing out of Yu Darvish right now?
Yeah, I'm thrilled. Like you, I expected it to take a little while and certainly maybe for a slightly higher walk rate than we've seen in his career. And instead, this might be the best version of Yu Darvish we've seen in the major leagues so far. The strikeouts are incredible. The walks are excellent. What's not to love? So I'm very encouraged. I don't know whether he's actually got the control back all the way, or whether his stuff is just so good that it doesn't matter that his control isn't all the way back, because hitters are going to swing at it anyway. But whatever the reason, it certainly seems like he's going to be back to being a number one starter much quicker than we might have expected.
Yeah, I drafted him in the three sport league as my second pitcher with Madison Bumgarner. And, you know, right now, maybe that's what's helping pique my excitement, because that certainly seems on paper to be a quality 1-2, 1-2 punch in a 14 team league next year. So I'm hoping my gut instincts are right on that. I'm going to ask this, I'm going to put him in some lofty, in a lofty category here, and have you tell me how nuts I am. I have him ranked as the sixth best starting pitcher going into next year. I have him behind Kershaw, Max Scherzer, Mr. Fernandez down in Miami, and Chris Sale and Madison Bumgarner. So I have him as the sixth best pitcher. That puts him ahead of two really interesting names. And these are the two guys I want you to compare him to and tell me how nuts I am. I would take Darvish over Arrieta. And I would put Darvish literally equal to Corey Kluber. You think that's too ambitious?
No, I don't think so. My one concern would be what the Rangers are doing with him in terms of innings, and whether they do try and be slightly cautious with him, just limiting his upside a bit relative to those two guys who you've got to think are well over 200 inning pitchers. But in terms of the raw stuff, and their strikeout upside, I think he's got the most of all three of them. So I certainly don't think it's outlandish to put him in there. And this might be just how I like to play, but if you're in a shallower league in particular, and it's not so hard to find those guys to fill in, maybe if you don't get quite the same amount of innings, then I like taking guys like that who have got the crazy upside. And I think, you know, there's potential for Darvish to lead the league in strikeouts if he can pitch enough innings.
Well, you know, I have a tendency, I split my leagues between sort of these national type leagues and very, very local leagues, which I really enjoy local leagues. Getting together with my buddies, drafting live and in person with all of us in the same room, you know, having some beers, giving each other a hard time, seeing each other on a regular basis and giving each other a hard time about bad trades that we made or, you know, picks that we made that just fell flat on their face. And one thing in local leagues, in leagues where people maybe don't pay as much attention as they do in the national contests, it seems like Darvish's numbers aren't going to look as good on paper as, you know, when compared to season-long stats from everyone else. So I certainly think that if you weasel into a situation where you can have Yu Darvish as your second best pitcher, like I did, I think there's a chance for a tremendous amount of upside in that tactic. So, you know, and like I said, it's going to vary from league to league as to where you can get him. And some leagues where there's keeper leagues and his price went way down when he was hurt, maybe he's going to be completely unavailable as well. So there's a wide range of outcomes, certainly. And I agree, that's a good point about his innings for next year. Now, and there's, you know, when you put him in the top six, seven, eight pitchers, you know, you've got other options that people might be leaning to off of, you know, Steven Strasburg, if he's in an exciting situation next year. I mean, there's going to be a range of outcomes where he's going to go somewhere between, you know, anywhere I would say from the sixth to the 14th or 15th pitcher off the board. And depending on your league style, that would be a drastic difference in where he gets picked, anywhere from, you know, the fourth round to the eighth or the ninth round, depending on the size of the draft. But Yu Darvish, with him being in Texas, seems like some of his performance could be going under the radar right now. And I'm stunned at how well he's doing initially coming back from Tommy John. If he takes another step forward next year, it's not inconceivable that, and if Clayton Kershaw doesn't come back next year as healthy as we've seen him in years past, there's literally a chance for him to be as good as Scherzer and in the discussion for one of the best pitchers in the game next year. You agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think he's perhaps, you know, one of the most exciting. He's certainly got the biggest range of plus pitches, I think. So, yeah, I don't see why, as long as he can stay healthy. that he couldn't be in that conversation for a number one pitcher, certainly if Kershaw isn't back to full health.
Well, the last name that I have on the list is probably one of the coolest names to say because it's literally pronounced Bearclaw. Kyle Bearclaw is a 26-year-old relief pitcher for the Marlins, and I just noticed that the Marlins are kind of in a unique relief pitching situation right now. A.J. Ramos has really struggled with his control for a lot of the year, and now he's on the DL, and they're using Fernando Rodney. And basically all year, even when Rodney was there before this, they've been using the 26-year-old Bearclaw in their high-leverage situations. We're seeing a moment in relief pitching right now where, like, Tony Watson has really stepped up from that high-pressure situation in Pittsburgh and, you know, Tyler Thornburg in Milwaukee. I mean, because of the exodus of relief pitching at the trade deadline, some of these guys are getting their shots now. And it just seems like Bearclaw going into next year is somebody, the ARB number is going up for Ramos. Fernando Rodney won't be back. So if you're prospecting for someone who's got elite strikeout numbers and has been working in high leverage situations, it seems like Kyle Bearclaw is someone who should be on people's radars going forward. How familiar with this guy were you before I put him on the list?
I was a bit familiar, but mainly because, you know, when you go to the leaderboards on your fantasy leagues and you sort by certain things, and every time you're on relief pitchers, Kyle Bearclaw seems to be at the top because he's got 88 strikeouts in 54 innings, which is just absurd. I couldn't really believe it, and I didn't know anything about this guy before this year, so I have been tracking him for a couple of months now because I kind of like these guys when they have these sort of historic seasons. Even if it's not somebody I'm owning in fantasy, I kind of like to watch and see if they're going to sort of shatter any records. And his numbers are certainly absurd. The problem really is the walks, I guess, which are almost as obscene as the strikeouts. But, yeah, he's certainly a guy that if you need some strikeouts from your relief pitchers, then there aren't really any better options out there right now.
You know, it's one of those things, too, where, you know, I mentioned the surroundings and the atmosphere, the places where these people are as being of utmost importance in engaging them, what their roles are likely to be in the future. You know, if Kyle Bearclaw was in, you know, was in Boston, or if he was in New York or someplace that would regularly go out and spend on closers, you'd think to yourself, well, you know, he's going to throw in this eighth inning role until he throws his arm out. And that's sort of what he is, you know, the late seventh and eighth inning kind of guy. But like I said, I think the Marlins are the kind of team where it's unlikely that they're going to bring Rodney back. You know, they definitely need some more starting pitching than what they've had. They have a history of not spending all that much money on closers. So to me, it's one of those guys where you can slot him in as one of the best and safest bets as a backup closer, at the least going into next year. And maybe he gets a chance to be a lot more than that. He's also a few years younger than A.J. Ramos is. And they've never seemed overly enamored with Ramos. They always seem to be bringing up other options. Carter Capps, of course, comes to mind, who might re-enter the situation again next year with his goofy delivery. But Kyle Bearclaw is somebody I wanted to put on radars that perhaps, you know, just hasn't been on people's radars outside of deeper leagues. Okay, I got one more goofy question for you, my friend.
Okay, go.
I think what happened is that when I was young, I read A Clockwork Orange. Is that a popular book in the culture over there? Not really.
It's just as popular over here as I get the impression it is there, yeah.
Okay. Well, so I wanted to ask the question about if you ever hear the word dregs, and is the word dregs ever used by you, or is that – I know it was a London street gang kind of language thing in the book.
Yeah, dregs is quite common, really, in regular parlance around here. You'd hear quite people say that in day-to-day conversation all the time.
Well, there you go. I don't know why, but I've always wondered that. And like I said, that definitely qualifies as a stupid question. I want to pick Darius's brain on one more fantasy question. Our three sport league is a 14-team league with one catcher, and I sort of made my mind up that I was going to take a a catcher, a kicker for football, and a defense for football as my last three picks. And going right down to the wire, I had to pick between two catchers that were left on the board. And I want to know Darius's opinion on the decision that I made. I had to choose between these two players, Cameron Rupp of the Phillies or Sandy Leon of the Red Sox. Were definitely the only two candidates that I saw left on the board. So I wonder if you would have a preference or what you would think of for those two guys for next year.
I'm not really sure what's happening with Leon. I'm actually riding him in the Friends with Fantasy Benefits 20 team league at the moment, just because he's on such a ridiculous hot streak. But this is so outside of anything he's done before, really, I think, in his career. And I don't think the Red Sox expected this to happen, and he's just kind of forced his way into the lineup. So I think if, you know, for no other reason than he's still relatively young and he's probably going to have a starting job next year, I would take Rupp, because I don't know what's going to happen with Leon or where he's going to find himself. I'm not even sure. I assume he's probably, is he going to be not on the Red Sox after the season, or I don't know what his contract status is.
Well, Leon is Leon. They signed him to a major league deal. That's actually the only reason that he was on the team to begin with, is he was one of the teams that would sign him to a major league contract before the season began, which will tell you that he was really in career backup mode. I really struggled going back and forth, and some of the factors that I thought going into next year that actually I did take Leon. Which I've had a lot of second thoughts about. Some of the factors that that I used in it is that I'm not enamored in any way, shape, or form with the Blake Swihart and the other young catcher that they had in Boston that was up this year, whose name escapes me at the moment. But
Vasquez.
I'm not enamored with them, and I just had this upside thought that if somehow he could stick in that lineup. That even without David Ortiz next year, whatever they do to replace his numbers or what have you, I really think that that he's got huge counting number upside in that lineup. I also put it in the context that there's a long history of really late bloomers for catchers, guys whose bats don't come around until later in their career. And it's a non-zero chance. I don't think it's a big chance. People sort of laugh. He's hitting 380. His average went up. The last time I heard he was hitting 380, his average had gone up from there. That's how filthy, ridiculous he has been as of late. So not only does the late bloomer thing happen, but the other thing that happens is I think people have a tendency to really downgrade players if they go on crazy hot stretches because they want to be – they're so dismissive of the hot stretch that I think – they forget to take the good from the hot stretch, which is this means that conceivably he could go on a hot stretch like this. people seem to completely reduce that from the equation when they think about a hot streak. And I'll remind people, Daniel Murphy in the playoffs last year is another guy who was like this, I literally think Daniel Murphy's ADP went down because of how he hit in the playoffs last year, which just – it never made any sense to me. So I own stock in Daniel Murphy in three leagues this year, and I'm delighted about it. And I basically got him at almost a discount because of his hot streak. The other thing I want to mention is that when I was thinking about Cameron Rupp, and I'm probably being too aggressive on this, and this is one thing I think Darius can probably help me out with, is one thing that I thought about Cameron Rupp is not only does he not have a really long track record, which neither does Leon, but I was also a little concerned about Jorge Alfaro and some of the possibilities of what might happen in Philadelphia. And obviously I always sort of prefer American League batters when they're similar. So I think Cameron Rupp is another guy, but when we're only talking about the 14th catcher and there's this much, that'll tell you what a horrendous year it was for catching. So only time will tell, but I thought maybe Sandy Leon was worth the upside. The other thing about one catcher leagues is generally someone emerges who's more than playable throughout the season. Are you in one catcher leagues or two catcher leagues, my friend?
A bit of both, actually. I think I'm in a couple of two catcher leagues and maybe The rest of mine are one. So yeah, I have a mixed bag. I certainly have one where I've been, I think Martin Maldonado is my latest attempt at filling my second catcher slot. That could be pretty horrible.
Yeah, that's not good, my friend. Not good at all.
I actually realized that Rupp and Leon are the same age as well. So I kind of, for some reason, thought Leon was older because he's been around, I guess he's been in the majors for, I think, 5 or 6 years now. Or on and off, so I'm kind of coming around to your way of thinking. Actually, I like the pick a bit more now that I've had a look at it.
Well, the other thing, if you want to be an eternal optimist on Sandy Leon, you could say that he never really had a chance at regular major league at bats before this. Cameron Rupp has had a pretty decent year. Certainly more than justifiable to take Cameron Rupp over Sandy Leon here. I certainly wouldn't hold that against anyone. You know, Cameron Rupp has had 14 home runs. He plays in a bandbox of a stadium as well. I think the Phillies hitting is likely to trend in a positive manner over the next couple years. So if he can hold on to that starting job over the next couple years, he certainly can be a valuable person in this sort of middling ground at catcher. But I thought it was kind of an interesting draft scenario that you don't often get to talk about while the season is still going on. One more thing, since we never talk about it on our regular podcast, are you dominating your leagues this year, my friend, or are you having a good year in fantasy baseball, or pretty normal?
Mixed, I would say. I'm first in a couple. I'm sort of middling in a couple of keeper leagues that I won last year. One that I mean with Justin that I won last year. But unfortunately, my pitchers in that were led by Greinke, obviously, who's missed about half the year and not been anywhere near as good as last season. And then I also had James Shields and Shelby Miller on that team. So that's not turned out too well. I'm winning one that I've played with some of my friends for a while now, and they've still, I think they haven't beaten me since we started, and I'm winning that again, so I'm quite keen to keep that going. but overall, probably not been my best year. I think as I do more kind of with, it's one of those things, and I think Justin might have experienced this a bit as well, the more sort of writing and podcast stuff that I do, the less time I seem to have to actually manage my teams. So I think I didn't actually put quite as much time into, certainly I was in San Francisco right around draft season this year, so I wasn't able to put a lot of work in because I kind of was going on holiday right before a couple of my drafts. And so, it's not been my best year from an actual league standpoint, just kind of average, really. How about you?
Well, in last year, in 6 of my 7 leagues, I cashed. So last year was a banner year, so I was kind of expecting some regression. And this is the first year that I really drafted pitching, and I seemed to hit the wrong spots in the number 2 pitcher minefield in a lot of my leagues this year. Fortunately, looks like I'm going to cash in at least 2 of the leagues that I'm in, and I cut down a league. So, you know, I don't have anything to complain about. One thing, you know, if you're listening to a podcast of this nature out there, you're probably very much very much a diehard like me, is that you got to sort of roll with the punches and realize that some years are just going to go better than others. You put yourself in the best situations for risk. And sometimes you get kicked right in the face by it. And sometimes, you come out thinking, oh, well, this is clearly a game of skill. When you cash in 6 out of 7 leagues, like I did last year, that was all skill. This year, when it only looks like I'm going to cash in either 2 or 3 out of 6, well, then obviously there's so much luck involved.
One thing I wanted to ask you, actually, as you've been asking me lots of questions about UK, when you're doing the drafts in person with your local friends, what's like the biggest difference? Do people draft players a lot more from the teams that they like, the teams that, you know, the team they support or their division, or what would you say, how different is it from, like, you know, the stuff we do online normally?
Well, there's definitely, one of the biggest things is the areas that you're from. In my area, and I have drafted in other areas of the country as well, but in my area especially, I mean, you're going to see Brewers and Cubs are going to be, are going to come at premiums. And there's always one or two people that are Minnesota Twin fans as well, because those teams are all relatively close by here. I would say traditionally, and this has gone away in the last couple of years, but remember, my first year in fantasy baseball was 1991, so it's been a long time. But traditionally, these local leagues are draft out of magazine kind of leagues for a lot of people. It's only been in recent years that most people sort of bring a laptop with them. So like I said, there's some people are ranking players, quite a bit off of last year's statistics when you're going out of a magazine. That seems, you're not quite looking at Baseball References, minor league stats, when you're going out of a magazine. So that's one of the biggest difference. And of course, then you have the other difference that in the local leagues, it's not unusual for someone to get like sort of tipsy drunk and then make worse decisions than they normally would. Which obviously doesn't happen quite as regularly, or I guess it could be happening, and we just don't know about it when we're drafting online.
Yeah, I suppose there are some picks, and you think, why did that happen? Maybe they are always drunk picks.
And so, I would say that it has a tendency to be just a lot more casual, a lot more casual form of drafting than what I see in NFBC. When somebody who follows it as closely as I do, which I consider myself to be sort of in the upper 2 or 3% for sure, at the end of an NFBC draft, there's literally the last 3 rounds, there's going to be 15 guys that I haven't heard of. And that's with me being able to go, 5 to 8 minor leaguers deep on almost every minor league team. So there's so it's I go from one extreme to the other. Fortunately, my smallest league that I'm in is a 12-team league, and I always laugh at ESPN and some of the other sites that have standard leagues that are smaller than that. If you can pick up an all-star off the waiver wire, to me, you're not really playing fantasy baseball. and so, I see some of that as well. But the 12-team league is with the smaller rosters is definitely you. One huge difference is a few days after the draft, when you draft locally like that, when all the players get set, you'll go in and you'll go, oh my gosh, nobody took this guy. Even when you get done with the reserve draft. So I think that's a huge difference. You don't see people like that fall through the crack when they're sitting in a sitting in a draft room where they have more roster space to play with. But like I said, it's a building relationships thing at the local drafts. Just sitting in a room, everybody sharing a beer or going to the local pub, which I happen to run one of those local pubs. So like one of my leagues is drafted at my place, obviously. And just a sort of relaxed long-term environment, sort of part of your friendship, interwoven in your friendships with people, which it sounds like you have some leagues like that too by you, because you said you've been playing with certain people for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, mostly it's online friends. There's not. I met a guy when I was doing my master's here in Liverpool who was an American guy. He was a Twins fan actually, and he invited me into a league he was starting up. So I've been in that for 7 years now. But that's kind of the only one that I'm in with somebody that I sort of met and then started the league. All the others are people like I know from fantasy and other things online. So they're almost all Americans who I've not met, or I've maybe Skyped with them, but not actually met them in person, at least.
Well, I went through a stretch where I was fairly in tuned with the English Premier League, and so I've always kind of had this correlation in my head, that one thing about being in fantasy baseball leagues here is that pretty much everybody qualifies as a fan of two of the three major sports here, which is, football, basketball, and baseball. So almost everybody is an NFL and an NBA or an NFL and an MLB. Almost everybody's a fan of two of those three sports. So, and I always made this correlation, and I always thought to myself from afar that it's got to be a little bit different for you, because I'm imagining, both soccer to a lesser degree, rugby, and some of the other sports over there sort of take the limelight, and so you don't have the pool to draw from to have local leagues like we do here. Like the week of a draft, I can lose an owner here and I can, run around and just talk to some people locally and, say, hey, who you like, some big baseball fans, anybody who might want to be in a fantasy league, and I can fill it. And I don't imagine it's like that there.
No, not at all. I could probably run around for the entire 6 months of the off season asking people if they knew baseball, and would struggle to get 12 people in my my local area. So yeah, it's very different. It's all done online through for me, really. And there are some British baseball fans, and I should give a shout out to Batflips and Nerds, which is a site and a podcast I just started doing with a few British guys over here, which is fun to talk about baseball with some British people. But yeah, if I was to go out and just say to people, you know, do you know who Mike Trout is? They would just give me a blank look and walk away.
I've always been surprised, though. I don't see a lot for soccer fantasy leagues. Is that something that happens by you?
Yeah, but it's very different. There are a few, like, I think there have been efforts to make it a little bit more Americanized. I know my uncle is in a league that he actually does draft with his friends in a pub. But the scale is much smaller. Most people sort of on the casual level play the official Barclays Premier League fantasy game, which is basically just you get a budget and you pick the team, you know, based of, out of your 100 million budget or whatever it is. And then they get points for goals and assists. But it's not, there's no like Roto. There was like a good Roto game a few years back that was running for free, but that kind of died out after a few years. And I think there are paid Roto leagues, style leagues for like serious fans, but it's much less of a prominent thing over here. And most people will just sort of do one of the official league ones and then set their lineup in week one. And then, you know, after week three, they've forgotten about it and it just sits there with injured players.
Well, I've often envied one thing about soccer. That's that with the way their club system works, and you're more than welcome. I'm no expert at this by any means. So you're more than welcome to correct me. Don't feel bashful about it if I'm wrong. But it seems like, I know they call them tables, and the bottom teams on the tables, if they don't win enough, they just like go down to the minor leagues, which I always thought, which it's not really the minor leagues, obviously, but they go down to a lower level than the Premier League. And I've always thought that that would be a most interesting way to, you know, to avoid tanking in what we call tanking in the major leagues, is that if your team got really bad, like the Astros were, well, then they would just have to go down a level and work their way back up. And so, okay. But I also can't help but think, with as much time as I've spent with fantasy sports, that like you could have a player on a bad team and his team could actually go down. And I know they can buy the contract of him then and move him back up to the English Premier League or something, but it seems like an extra variable that we wouldn't have to worry about here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we don't have that issue in fantasy, obviously, because it's just wouldn't happen within the season. I suppose you know, if you were in a really deep format maybe, and you sort of kept players from year to year, and you suddenly found that your team got relegated from the Premier League, it would be quite complicated wondering whether you should keep them for the whole season while they were no longer playing in the league. But I do actually play in a fantasy NFL, just to distinguish it from our football league, where we have three leagues and there is promotion and relegation. So the teams, the four teams in the first league go into the playoffs, but the bottom four teams will get relegated to League Two, and then the four teams from League Two will come up the next year. It's actually one of my favorite leagues because everybody plays right to the end of the year, because even if you're not in contention for the playoffs, you've got to try not to get relegated.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for that. I would say the number one complaint about fantasy leagues in America, you know, especially all the free ones online, is that you have half the league that decides to bail on the league itself. So actually winning a format like that doesn't really do a lot for you. Well, anyway, my friend, we should probably be moving on. I found out we could chat longer than I thought. I added extra questions because I figured we could only chat for probably half an hour, just being us two numbskulls and not having the other two numbskulls with us. it certainly was a lot of fun to do this, and I'm glad I did it. I got to figure out how to get everything bundled and over to Justin. But hopefully this episode 151 will be up for everybody here in the next day or two at worst. Thanks so much for the interaction and the ambition to come on with the lowest level numbskull of us all and have me host a show today, because I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun talking to you. You got any new stuff on the horizon coming out on your other sites?
I just did a piece that went up yesterday. I kind of was wondering about, with sort of Swanson coming up, I thought how often that when the 40-man rosters, you know, the rosters expand, how often do September call-ups actually make an impact. So I sort of did a little recent history of September call-ups and looked at how often it has really happened that a guy has made an impact that would be useful in fantasy. So yeah, that's site now.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I also, it seemed like traditionally, like 4 or 5 years ago, even, it was very odd for players to come up in this stretch of the season. Usually they don't, if they haven't been called up by now, they don't come up until September, which was one of the things that I really thought was interesting about the Dansby Swanson call up in general. And it's also something like you'll hear a lot of people analyzing draft years and talking about how, you know, take September stats out of it, because a lot of times, you know, you have a quad A or a triple A pitcher that this guy's hitting home runs off of or what have you in September. That September stats don't mean nearly as much. And it's just curious because it seems like now with the amount of teams that are tanking and looking forward, like the Astros did, like the Cubs did to a lesser extent, I think you're gonna find out that, you know, you'll hear a lot more doubt about stats even earlier. You know, earlier in the season, into August and into late July after the All-Star game than you used to. So that's a very interesting article, and I will definitely look it up. Well, for all you Friends with Fantasy Benefit fans out there, we really appreciate the listen and the download. We did the best we could to fill in for two very sharp guys. Eli and Justin will definitely be back with us next week. Thank you so much for your support. And Darius, 1 week from now, we'll do this again. Okay, my friend?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great, really good. So, yeah, I look forward to doing it again next week.
All right. Thanks so much. Signing off for Friends with Fantasy Benefits.